This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Duncan MacLeod and this is the Tech Central Show. The show is brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and solutions. And we thank them for partnering with Tech Central to bring you these great interviews. And we have a cracker of an interview today. Dietlof Meyer is CEO of Maziv, the parent company of South Africa's largest fiber network operator, Vumatel, and also, of course, Dark Fiber Africa. And I think Dietlof is a very relieved man today. After 3.5 years, Vodacom has been cleared to buy a 30% co-controlling stake in Maziv after the Competition Commission recommended the deal be blocked and then the Competition Tribunal ordered that it be prohibited. And only after the Commission backtracked, after the parties made some additional concessions, did the deal go through at the Competition Appeal Court. It's now happened by final approval from communications regulator ICASA, which seems likely, and then the money will flow. Dietlof, welcome to the show.
Hey, Duncan. Thank you. Thank you. It's always nice being here. Thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's good to see you again after so long. This process has taken almost 4 years. I imagine that it has aged you and your team much more than that, though. What are you feeling right now?
Listen, Duncan, we welcome the decision. So I think the appeal court took their decision quite quickly. We had nearly 4 years, like you said, in this process. I think people don't understand perfectly, but we had like over 18 requests for information, nearly 25,000 pages. I think at the end it was close to 30,000 pages of documents. So really it was a process, and it went up and down. And I think just, the outcome for us is we welcomed it, obviously. And now the work actually begins, because now we obviously have to get this over the line. There's big assets coming in from transfer assets from Vodacom Access and Metro Fibers. There's big fiber coming in from the home side, nearly 160,000 homes also covered. And obviously it's then getting the synergies right, to say, listen, how do we go forward? How do we drive the strategy that we put on hold for nearly 3 years or 3.5 years?
Was it worth it? I mean, this was such a long time and must have been a very stressful process.
It was stressful. And listen, it took long, and the industry moves, so we're dynamic. And I think it did take too long. I mean, that's my opinion. But now, listen, it's a good outcome for us, and I think it's a good outcome because of two things. If you look at my strategy as Maziv, we believe in it's a culture piece and that we believe in. It's connecting South Africa. That's the first thing. And I think I've told you this previously. And the second thing is with that connection, we truly believe that we're changing lives. And I think, it's closing that digital divide in South Africa, but it's also really making us as South Africa competitive, to say, listen, how do we stay competitive with the rest of the world? And if you're not connected, I mean, that competitiveness will disappear, and that was for me the biggest problem with taking so long. The whole market slowed down. Prior our submission and request to actually do the merger, the industry was connecting nearly 400,000 homes or past nearly 400,000 homes a quarter. And if you look at it today, I mean, we're not on 80,000 a quarter.
That's the thing I don't understand, though. I mean, you guys were going through this process with the Competition Commission, but your competitors in the fiber space weren't. Why did they also slow down?
It's just the whole machine slowed down.
Why is that?
Because it's a build engine. So we create these build engines that deliver homes. And with that, obviously, cost comes down and then scale drives it. So if you start losing the scale, it's difficult for people to keep it going because then it's more cost. It's not that cost efficient. So what you're seeing is, you'll open up fronts of build and then people will, the contractors will build in different areas, different times, So they also create efficiency within their groups. And if you take a big player out of that market or the biggest player out of that market, suddenly those efficiencies don't make sense. And then it becomes a little bit of a different scenario. Okay. So you had, you still had open serve building, and they continued building, but you saw some of the smaller operators not building. And I also think access to capital is, you know, that was my scarce resource always. It was how do you get that access to capital? You know, and I think a lot of the F&Os are struggling with the same, you know, and that's also linked to the scale element of it. And I think that was the cornerstone of this deal. You know, I always say, listen, to be successful in a huge capital intensive, upfront capital intensive business, you need strong shareholders. Mm-hmm. It's critical. And we were lucky. We had really, really good shareholders from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But it got to a point where it's the next phase of it. You know, we have to now scale in a different way. And I think that's the positive for me from this deal. You know, you got Vodacom India. They're long-term players. They understand this market. You know, they're local. And they're up for scale, you know. And with that comes, again, this new wave of strong shareholders, access to capital, which I like, you know. And I think that supports the whole business model.
Just looking back at the process and how long it took, I mean, do you think it's actually held back the development of the industry? And do you think, I mean, it's clear to you, from what you've said, that it's you believe it's unacceptable that it took this long for this deal to go through. What do you think the Competition Commission and the Competition Authority should learn about through this process?
I think, you know, did it hold it back? I definitely think so. We're in a fast-moving industry. You know, we're very dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
We compete with the world on connectivity. And that's how I see it. You know, we're sitting in a country with 18 million homes. You know, it's actually a little bit more now, but we only got 6 million homes passed with fiber at this point. So there's still a gap of 12 million homes that we have to connect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you look at the throughputs that these homes connected at this point get and use. I mean, I always quote Mitchell's Plain that's using 400 gigs of fiber versus a Parkhurst or a Sandton that's using 200 gigs of fiber of data a month. And the reason for that is you've got 10 devices active in those homes. They need and to use fiber or get data in abundance is critical.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's the cornerstone of development and competitiveness. So time obviously played a role in slowing this down. Mm-hmm. And time is not our friend. I think if you look at the amount of work we have to do in this country, time is not our friend. And if you look at where the world is positioning themselves with all the AI tools, connectivity tools, and the biggest issue for me in the lowest underserved areas or the previously disadvantaged areas, that's where the big gap sits. Because those are the areas we have to connect quick, because that's where the competitiveness and economic development and economic growth will come from.
So how did this deal come together in the end? Clearly there was a bit of to and fro at the end with the Competition Commission, which really changed its tune on this deal. I know you made some further concessions. I imagine that the Trade Minister voicing his support for the deal would have helped get it across the line. But maybe just give us some color of how this actually got across the line right at the end there. And why the Competition Commission changed its tune.
Listen, I think it was always a balancing act between competition on the one side that we can prove. I mean, there's factual horizontal, vertical influences on the one side and then the public interest on the other side. And I think we had to balance that, you know. And I think at the end of the day, if you look at the conditions, if you look at how we balance the public interest leg and the social upliftment leg with the competition and the concerns that we address through the conditions, I think we reached a perfect balance there at the end of the day. It took long, you know, and as you know, I mean, between the outcome and the appeal court, there was another little bit of a negotiation that we did. And what we did there was we actually strengthened the public interest side a little bit more, you know, and that pinned it to that 12 million, your 12 billion investment that we had to do on rollout.
Mm-hmm.
And we also then moved the date of when we start with the 12 billion to the 1st of April 2025, which then says, listen, going forward 5 years, we're going to push the next 12 billion into it, you know. So I think the turning point was balancing really or getting alignment with the competition concerns and the public interest impact that we could make. And I think that turned it, you know. And
couldn't that have been done a lot earlier?
I was, listen, you know my opinion on it, you know, but I really still go back to say, listen, quick decision making. You know, if we are serious about development and upliftment, we have to get technology into the communities. It's critical.
Mm-hmm.
And And we have to do it fast. You know, access to capital, do it fast. And then this third pillar of this is, for me, quality. Mm-hmm. You have to build quality networks into communities so we can actually make sure that that people get quality services in areas that need it more because they use it more. You know?
You've clearly done all the hard work here going through these regulatory processes. Do you think you've cleared the way now for further consolidation in this industry? Do you think there are going to be further deals on the back of this? And does Vumatel and Maziv play any sort of role in further consolidation? Do you have an appetite for that?
Listen, at the end of the day, you know, my strategies our strategy is quite easy, you know, and simple. We have to connect as many homes as possible, as fast as possible. You know, I would love my competitors and the other FNOs to also do it, you know, and I think that's the key thing. You know, there's no way we're going to connect the next 12 million homes, but I would love to do a big chunk of it quickly.
Mm.
But what we're seeing nicely in the market, and it started from the old Vuma days, you know, where you saw people actually following us a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. We launched prepaid first. And I think we launched it first in the world, prepaid fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And we took a big bet on it. And if you go look at the prepaid impact or the fiber prepaid impact in South Africa today, it's phenomenal. And it opens alleys and channels for people to actually deliver internet in different ways in communities that was never possible 5 years ago. So I would say, listen, if that needs consolidation, then consolidation has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in scale. I think it's critical because it's hugely capital intensive. So if you get your scale wrong, your business models in time will be under pressure, you know, because as you go into the lower LSM areas, your ARPUs dip a bit, mm-hmm. you know, and you need strong income statements and strong balance sheets or strong revenue and EBITDAs to drive your balance sheet type of scenario. Prepaid helps, obviously, because it helps your working capital quite nicely. But still, you need access to capital. And what I'm afraid of is that some of the smaller players don't have that access to capital and, mm-hmm. and they don't get to the scale. And then if that happens, I think acquisitions and consolidation is possible,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's not bad. It's possible because if you want a world-class connected South Africa, you need very serious, like I said, scalable shareholders or scalable investment in this country.
Do we end up with something that kind of resembles the mobile market where there are four players in South Africa? You know, we've got dozens and dozens of FNOs in the South African context, many of them small. Does that consolidation eventually and this need for scale eventually drive a market where there are maybe three or four FNOs?
That can easily happen. Mm-hmm. And I think you can just go look at the rest of the world. You know, you see startups coming, they scale, it's usually capital intensive. And people think, you know, it's difficult to just build the networks. It's very difficult to build the networks and get the solutions out there. But it's even more difficult to maintain these networks. And that you can see all over Africa, mm-hmm. you know, even on the mobile networks. I mean, to maintain those networks, it's difficult. The initial investment, rolling out the networks, getting the coverage, that's actually the easy side of it, you know. But in time, this changes from a building engine to a maintenance engine, meaning you'll have to pump huge capex into it. And a good example is what we did on DFA now. You know, we had to pump 800 million rands into just getting DFA's network up to standard.
Because fiber does degrade. People don't realize
it degrades over time. Mm. And if it's 20 years or 30 years, doesn't matter. It degrades. Every time a fiber breaks and you repair it, you lose some of your efficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go look at the environment we're working on in, you know, with the trenching and the upgrades of infrastructure, our network is under pressure, you know. So the people forget a lot of times the maintenance leg of running these networks. And if you pull that back to the end of the day, the quality of what you have to supply to the customer, it's critical. Otherwise, it's the same boat we're in today.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a quality, reliable connection for people to actually do what they want to do through it, you know, compete, do business, go international. And for me, that's the critical thing. So the market will be open. I think all the FNOs and all the big players are thinking about things, but I think in time, the only thing I do know is that with the technologies on the M&O side, they need access to fiber.
Mm.
They need access to this data in abundance because it's just absolutely phenomenal. You know what's happening on the AI front at this point. And if you don't, of
course, the future spectrum is going to be very high frequency, and that has to be delivered on fiber to base stations that are very close to people's homes, and you have that network. There's one more regulatory approval you need, and that's from ICASA. What exactly does ICASA need to do, and how long is that going to take?
Listen, I hope it takes quickly. That's the first thing. But I think we're in discussion with the chair, and we're in discussion with a lot of people. There's obviously a few things that has to happen, but the biggest thing that has to happen is at this point, if you look at our license, 100% is owned by CIVH, and that has to be split. So there's an ownership change happening at the top, 30% Vodacom, 70% CIVH. You know, and I think that's the main hurdle. We must see how that works. And then obviously we'll push it and follow the process that ICASA and the chair actually
is. Technical process, or is there?
We believe it's technical, but there's debates on a few things around it, you know, that we are debating with him. But it's mainly the restructuring of the shell, the structure on the license, you know.
Okay.
But existing license, restructuring of that, and then obviously driving, you know. Okay. And they were obviously waiting for the ComCom outcome as well, you know. So they had to sit back a little bit, look at the outcome, look at the conditions, and obviously now do the structure.
So the money flows post the ICASA approval?
Yeah, the money flows after the implementation date, which is post the ICASA implementation.
Okay. Yes. So when that money flows, what happens next? Are you guys raring to go? Or have you got teams ready to start deploying? Take us through what your deployment plan is and where you're going to go first.
Yeah, I think, listen, so this year we started off for the first time nearly in 2.5 years, we started off building a little bit, you know. So I kicked off about 250,000 homes this year that I'm funding through my own working capital, you know. So I had my own, you know, I had to really push the working capital leg of it, drive obviously your EBITDA as high as possible. And so we are in process of building, you know, but I would love to fast track that. So if you look at this, you know, and I think that's one of the positives of the deal. The deal comes in two phases, you know.
Okay.
You've got assets coming into our network, you know. So you've got metro fiber coming into our network.
This is Vodacom's assets.
Yeah, 5,000 kilometers of metro assets coming into our network. That takes the DFA network from 15,000 to 20,000.
They also have firm fiber to the home in some areas, don't they?
Then they've got fiber to the home on the other side, which is nearly 160,000 homes, you know, and with a good uptake on those homes. So what we will do immediately is start looking at the details. So we've got like a 3-month period to just do verifications of the assets and see how it works, see how it fits into our assets. Then we'll transfer those assets in as quickly as possible, get them integrated into the Vuma and the DFA networks.
So they become Vumatel customers.
Vumatel customers on an open access basis. So on the access network, on Metro, open it up. So our customer base can actually go in and use the fiber. Same with the fiber to the home. We'll open it up. It's open access at this point, but I'll open it up to my whole ISP base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's the first step. That will then immediately, the quicker I can do that, that'll immediately push my EBITDA up, because, I mean, this is revenue-generating assets.
Mm.
And it's quite a substantial amount of money that can come through the EBITDA side. The EBITDA then, obviously, with my debt, that with the cash injection coming into the business, that will obviously bring down that liability a little bit. You know, that debt to EBITDA ratio will really improve. And then, obviously, I've got a facility at the back that I obviously have to apply for, but I've got the facility right, and obviously that'll then unlock a lot of capital for us then to take the next phase on. You know, we committed to 1 million homes over the next 5 years. We committed to 12 billion over the next 5 years, starting 1st of April, of which 9 million will be building out new homes. You know, and most of those homes, 1 million of those homes, obviously in like the old reach areas, and then 350,000 of those homes we're gonna do in key areas, you know, which is the low LSM.
So what areas are we talking about here? Are we talking about urban centers, the townships on the periphery of big cities like your Soweto's, your Alex's, your Tembisa's and places like that, and similar townships in Cape Town? Or are we talking further afield, going into smaller towns and...
Yeah, at this point we have to weigh it up a little bit. You know, we got existing networks in obviously we started in core, we got the 1 million homes in core. Then we got 1 million homes in the reach areas, the traditional reach areas. So we cover Vosloorus and Soweto and Shushangufwe and Eerste Rust and Mitchell's Plain.
That's my typical reach.
You know, that's a typical income, household income of between 30,000 and 5,000 and a month. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you go look at it, and I was explaining it to my management team the other day, you go look at 30,000 and 5, there's quite a big difference there. You know what I'm saying? So it's quite a diverse type of segment, you know, and what we're seeing is, listen, there's so many of these homes, it's phenomenal. Yeah, we always thought it's only 4.8 million of these, of the 18 million homes is reach, but it's more than that. You know, and then 9 million is the key, which is a typical under 5,000, you know, more informal dwelling type of scenarios. So what we will do is we will take our existing areas and build it out as far as we can. You know, and if that touches key, it touches key. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's just the way you actually roll out this technology at a more affordable price to actually try and get to a point where you can satisfy the customer need, but at a price point that makes sense for that household income. You know, but that's what we would try and do, to say, listen, how do we extend and grow this 1 million homes out, and see how we can do that. But I'm not going to do other rural areas. You know, if I see, listen, we've got connectivity in an area that we've got fiber into as an access point, you know, I mean, I'm going to roll out those areas, you know, and there's still a lot of them. You know, think about it. There's that 12 million homes that we can address. You know, people never ask me this question, but, you know, core, obviously the high LSM areas. Reach for us, we got to the name reach. It was reach, you know, just reach out. Go out of your comfort zone, business as usual, and reach into the bigger communities.
Right.
And key for me was that leg of it is where you go in, and it's basically impossible to roll out into these areas. But if you can get it right, it's the key to unlock that potential. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got to the name key. It was to say, listen, how do we challenge ourselves to get that price per home built down to 2,000 rand, or even under 2,000 rand if we can?
Yeah.
And that was the challenge. You know,
how many homes are in that key?
9 million, 9.6 million.
And are all of those addressable?
Most of them are addressable.
Okay.
It always depends on the density and the distance of that area from a main point.
Yes.
You know, because remember, you have to have access fiber in there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what you will see is a lot of them might not be addressable now, mm-hmm. because you still got a lot of the MNO sites in South Africa linked to microwave. Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't see a dedicated fiber connection to that tower. It's quite a few. But what you now see, and this is how this thing fits in for me perfectly, is I think the big MNOs realize, listen, if they want to push their technologies forwards, they will have to get to a fiber connection there. Now, we just did a little exercise. I mean, there's nearly 40,000 kilometers of fiber we have to build to connect the towers. But if you connect those towers immediately, that opens up other areas, you know, where the key and the reach can play a proper role, you know, where we can then build on that to create a connected South
Africa. So in other words, DFA goes in, connects the towers first, and then from there, Vumatel goes in and runs the fiber that has been deployed to connect those towers.
Yeah, but we will have to get very good, you know, if you go look at what a cost of a microwave connection is, you know, versus what the cost will be on a fiber connection, it's like 10 times, you know, roughly 10 times the
cost. 10 times higher on fiber.
Yeah. Okay. To get there, because it's distance-based, labor-based, very expensive. But I think there are mechanisms to get there. There are models that we're working on to see, listen, can we not work with the big MNOs to see if we can't help?
Would you go anywhere that's unprofitable?
At this point, there's so much to do. No.
Okay.
You know, okay. You know, but I think you'll get
to... are a business at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. So, but at a point, I think you might go into areas that's less profitable.
Sure.
You know, and... but it's always linked to, remember, we infrastructure, we wholesale.
Mm.
It's linked to that capex. Mm-hmm. It's linked to that capital. There's a return. I've got strong shareholders on top of me that needs returns.
I know Shamil wants a return, I'm sure.
No. Shamil needs a return. I mean, Remgro needs a return. New GX needs a return. You know, so the guys, so it's serious boys, you know. Mm. But I really think, you know, we will look at it a little bit differently in time. You know, mm-hmm. it might be a little bit different from a profitability point of view. But then it's linked to uptake as well. Okay. You know, I think all the business models are linked to basically a 50 to 60% uptake ratio. Mm-hmm. You know, that's quite a big delta between 100% and 60.
Yeah.
You know, so I think what you'll see in time is if your uptake starts overshooting, and if we can get it right, and it's not proven anywhere in the world yet, you know, but if you can see that you get to the uptakes that you have to get to, which is at 60%, 70%, then listen, a lot of the investments will make sense. And that's one of the reasons why I was never supporting overbuild, not because of competition and all that. It was because of the investment and the return on the investment. There's so much for us to build in South Africa that let's cover the country and get the uptake.
So you're not going to build where OpenServe's been or
no, we've
else.
Never done it.
You've never done that?
No, you never done it. That's my strategy from day one. I will not do it. I don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what, you're going to, then you compete on what? You compete on a portion of what's remaining, capped on a 60%. So to really make this model work, just basically you have to get to 30%. To make this thing financially work, you have to get to 60%.
Okay. Your shareholders comfortable with the margins coming down as you start to deploy into what will be lower margin areas?
Listen, it depends back to the capex you invest.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we do our little investment models. Margins, I think, if we do it smartly, your margins shouldn't come down.
Okay,
you know, because it's linked to the uptake on the one side, and it's linked to efficient deployment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I really, you know, I believe that margins, it's a healthy business. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we're running Maziv, you know, which is basically the two big companies. We're running Vumatel and DFA with 740 people at this point. You know, it started at much, much higher than that, you know. But we got this efficiencies, you know, and you look at the automations and the digitalization of it, the sales force that we're putting in, the CRM systems that we're putting in, supporting the customers more digitally, you know, and you look at also what the ISPs are playing and how they're playing their role on top of us. It's a different business than 5-6 years ago, you know. So
you've done a lot of corporatization of your business over the last few years, and I guess you've had three and a half years to, when you have slowed down your deployments to really think about where you're going to take this business and what it's going to look like. Has that set you up now? I think for this next phase of growth, and how has the culture in Vumatel and Maziv changed over the last few years?
You know, Duncan, the name Maziv was only created about 3 years ago. You know, we sat and we decided, it was a board meeting, and we decided on the way on Maziv. You know, people never ask me, except my chairman of Remgro asked me one day, how did we get to the name Maziv? And the name actually came from the word Mazi, which is a Greek word for togetherness, you know, and we put the V on just to, but it's, you know, and that was the starting point of my culture piece, you know, to say, listen, how do we get the guys together, you know, how do we get this team of people together to absolutely focus on our purpose, which is connecting South Africa and changing those lives, you know, and we kicked off a canvas about 2.5 years ago, and we started working with the different companies. You know, you've got a DFA that's quite an old company, you know, it's a little bit slower, it's a little bit structured, and then you had the Vuma on the one side, which was this maverick youngsters, you know, I mean, unstoppable. And it was very difficult to pull this together. You know, it took time and it took effort, but I think it's there. You know, when the outcome came last week or the week after last, you know, I had a floor talk immediately, a town hall with the whole company. You know, nearly 2,000 people on the call, but the building I was sitting in. Absolutely, I mean, it echoed up. Other people were just screaming on the excitement, you know, with the excitement.
I'm sure there must have been a lot of tension over this. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if the money's going to flow. And I guess it creates a lot of uncertainty in the organization. So I guess there was an expression of relief.
I think relief and we welcome happiness, you know, because now it fits into our purpose and our belief system, you know. And I really think, you know, if we can get it right, then we will help South Africa. I promise you, I believe that to the core and back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that connected. We need a connected South Africa to be competitive. And if you ask me what my next steps were, if they didn't approve the deal, then it would have put us back.
Mm-hmm.
It would have put us. I think back.
What were you going to do?
No, listen. We would have had to look for money. Remember, I could only fund my through free cash and working capital. Mm. I could do X to only X, mm. which is 200,000 homes.
You probably couldn't have gone and raised more debt because you were already had a lot of debt.
And remember, my shareholders got to a point where they said, listen, guys, let's get capital in, let's get funding in. And so I would have tried to get then to other market, to the international markets maybe, but we would have kicked that process off. And it wasn't a given. I mean, it's not easy because it's what I wanted was a long-term investment, not just a short-term exit type of structure, but a longer-term investment that could put the whole the company forward strategically, longer-term, and that's where Vodacom, they were just perfect for this, But any one of the mobile network operators, I mean, they're serious investors in this country. And if you look at our telecommunications in this country, we're world class if you compare us with the rest of the world.
Some of the stuff you're looking to do here, especially with your key product, and there's a lot of talk about fiber to the shack. Has this been done anywhere else in the world, or were you actually inventing it here? Are you trying these business models for the first time on the global stage?
Yeah, listen, it's they tried in Brazil, they tried in some of the places, but we went to Brazil. I think it dips on quality. I think sustainability, that's sustainable investment. So I think it works. But we're the leader. I've got people from Africa phoning me weekly, to assist, asking help. How do we sort it out? And I think we up there because we understand the market well. We launched that prepaid first. It's
mobile.
Remember, we launched prepaid first on mobile. I think that was it. That's where I got the idea. Okay. When we launched it in, I was in mobile for 23 years, but prepaid was phenomenal on mobile. And when we launched it on the fiber side, it just opened up a lot of things for us. Mm-hmm. Now we must go the extra mile. We must go and see, listen, how do we take it really out there from a quality point of view? And I think the challenge would be two things. Definitely your distribution and support system in those areas because it's different. So drive activity. And the second thing is customer experience, because it becomes now difficult. Remember, you don't have street addresses. You don't have house addresses. You have to have GPS type of coordinates. It's different, but it's workable. And there, I think Brazil's quite good. They've got one or two things that you can learn from, but they don't have a holistic type of solution for it. I think we're leading it by far at this point, but it's the beginning. So let's see.
Interesting. I want to ask about Vodacom. So they now have what has been termed a co-controlling stake. They're taking 30%. They have an option to take, I think it's 34.95, which has been reduced from 40. I think that was one of the last-minute agreements with the Competition Commission. What does co-controlling mean in practice? What does the board look like now? And what say does Vodacom have? Do they get to determine where you deploy? Who really controls the strategic direction of this business?
Listen, I think the board does, obviously. But Vodacom will be part of that board. We'll have strong independence on the board. You'll have Vodacom will have the same shell, the directors as CIVH. There's a few things. I mean, there's lots of detail on this, but I think the big thing is they'll take part in the day-to-day business strategies of the organization. They won't have the authority to veto the business case, especially where it's on new rollout and deployment of fiber across South Africa. Mm-hmm. And also on CapEx, they won't have a right to veto the CapEx if it's directly linked to really driving the objectives of the organization. And I think that's it. Then there's obviously information that will be supplied to them. There's a little bit of confidentiality that we will take out of the board back so the directors will see a little bit, or the shareholders will see different things than the board. But effectively they'll be part of the board, and drive the objectives of Maziv, which is this rollout, and that's what I was so happy about on the 12 billion investment, So listen, we pre-committed to 12 billion. I mean, that's my business model. Look at it strategically the way you want to look at it. I need capital to expand. I'm happy with the 12 billion. Of that 12 billion, 9 goes into rollout and the rest goes into upgrades of system, customer experience, things like that.
None of it going into debt repayment.
In that, it's full rollout. Okay. So it's capital. So maintenance, obviously don't underestimate the amount of maintenance in there. But I've got 9 billion there to just roll out. That's as it stands today. And and a million homes. And of those million homes, 300,000 of those, 50,000 of those homes will be in key areas. Mm-hmm. But I would love to get to the next 3 million homes, you know. So I see us currently, we're on 2 million homes, you know, with the additional million homes, we'll be on 3 million homes. I can easily see that in time we get to the 5 million homes as a massive group, you know. That's what I see into the future, you know. But and that's and I mean, then I hope the my other fiber network operators also drive hard so we can get to that 10, 12, 13 million penetration in time. You know.
Is there a race underway now that this deal has been concluded? I mean, is a starting gun gone and all the FNOs are now going to?
I hope so. In a way, I hope so. But listen, I think the guys are serious. You know, they do what they can do. You know, and but I really, you know, we had an idle time, I believe, for 3 years. I believe we should kick off the engine. You know, we're going to start. I hope that drives, you know, ignites the engine again, drives down costs, and we roll out. And that allows people then to build as well, you know. And it's access to capital is always a challenge. I think some of the FNOs have to work hard on that. But I hope it starts again, that we drive 300,000, 400,000 homes a quarter.
You've obviously done some deployments in Kayamandi and in outside Stellenbosch, and also here in Alexandra and Johannesburg. I guess my question is, what have your learnings been around those deployments? What have you discovered? Does it make sense, the price points you're deploying? And particularly in Kayamandi, there seems to be a lot of focus on that township. I know that Alan or Craig's Fiber Time has been deploying there, and there seems to be a bit of bad blood between the organizations, a bit of fighting going on. What's the story there? What's happened?
No. I know Alan I know Alan's dad actually very well, and Alan forever, you know. Yeah. So no, I don't think so. But, you know, you look at Kayamandi is a small little place. I mean, we tested our key there first. You know, but we focused on Alex a little bit more, you know. Okay. So we you know, I don't know if you remember our previous conditions. We always said, listen, we're going to go into Alex. Even under the old, you know, years ago, we said, listen, Alex was our sub-99 rand type of tariff. Mm. And we committed to that, you know. So Alex was my focus area, you know. It's close to us. Proof of concept. And we proved it, you know. So we got an amazing uptake in Alexa, you know. So we got 48% uptake, fastest uptake ever on our network, faster than Reach at this point, you know. So close to 30,000 homes deployed, very, very quick uptake, you know. And it tells me it works, you know. But it's affordability, you know, get to a price point that makes sense and get to a service that makes sense. And then get to a mechanism where you can support those customers. People underestimate that leg of it, you know. So we got fantastic ideas to do it. Mm-hmm. I haven't scaled yet. So I haven't gone and scaled it yet, because I had to look at the CapEx I had and said, listen, where do I deploy this in the best ways? Mm-hmm. That obviously went to Reach, you know. So my most of the 220,000, 50,000 homes that I've got now is going to the more traditional Reach areas, but obviously outskirts of those areas. Focus will happen now, you know, where I start building in different places, but in a controlled way, you know. And really, there's a very little, in the middle of Alex, you will have Reach areas. You wouldn't even have core areas in there, you know, with disposable income. That's not a problem. Mm-hmm. But the issue is you have to create a solution that makes sense for the area. You know, you can't just have a broad brush type stroke over it and say, this is a key area. It's a different scenario. People want different solutions.
What's the pricing model? I mean, I think it was 99 rand a month was your price point. There's products in the market 5 rand a day on prepaid. What's your thinking around how you deploy the pricing model? Does it become more like the cellular model where you just buy some data when you need it? I mean, what's the thinking?
I think this is different opinions. Yeah, you know, my opinion and you know. You know, and I'm the first guy to say let's go to a per second, but you know, we launched per second even up in Africa, you know, per tariffs, you know, and billing tariffs. And the reason why we did that years ago was because, remember, if you paid per minute or you had a contract and you drop a call, you paid for the whole minute. Mm. On fiber, for me, it's you know, and this is my philosophy at this point. You know, I think it's you have to be connected. You know what I'm saying? I would rather put in different payment plans type of, you know, look at this airtime advance type of scenario. I love that. You know, I think look at how people are selling prepaid in South Africa at this point. Mm. But keep the person connected. Keep the house committed, connected. And that's my model, you know, and that's the model I'm using in Alex as well. Yes, we got weekly bundles and two weekly bundles, but ultimately, I think if I can have my perfect world, you know, you want to keep a house connected because it's not just the dad that or the mom that pays the account in the house that needs it. It's the kids that need it when they study, when the mom and dad's not there. I would love to keep the homes connected, you know, and at a price point then for the whole period that makes sense with data and abundance. You know, for me, it's a bit different to a cell phone or to a mobile phone, you know, which is a more on-demand type of thing. Mm-hmm. I think throughput is critical. I think also then, you know, if you go look at daily recharges, people behavior changes, you know, they download a lot of stuff and then they, you know, they only recharge once a month or twice a month or a few days a month, you know, so I think there will be ARPU challenges on that investment in some instances, but then again, if you get the scale and you get the uptake, you know, it might be a different model. For me, I would love to keep homes connected, you know, even longer than what they pay for. But on a, you know, remember the old lay-by stories where you get the stuff and you pay it off over time, you know, you get your access, you know, you pay it, but you've got access to that service, you know. And for me, it's a difference because people are in the home. There's 5 or 6 or 10 devices active. You know, I think limiting devices, you know, in a home solution, you know, that I'm not pro limiting it. I would love to have so many devices on a, you know, the house must be connected, and that's what you want, you know, because people do different things. I mean, if you go into a typical house in Mitchell's Plain, I mean, you can't believe it. It's a very long, very narrow, small, you know, frontage like 10 meters, but it's quite long. So people are busy in every room, you know, with different things, you know.
Yeah.
We'll do homework, you know, they do their work, they do call centers in their study, you know, and you want that home to be connected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the critical thing, you know. So different views. I mean, we might even change our model later on, but I just say, listen, let's look at connecting the homes, you know, and create a connection that makes sense.
Yeah. And at the 99 Rand price point, do you believe it's sustainable?
If you get the scale, it can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all linked to the capital deployment. You know, we started with core homes at 20,000 Rand a home. Now we're under 2,000 Rand a home. Depends on what you do in that area. Mm-hmm. And it's different. Sometimes it's strange. Mm-hmm. It's very aerial in the key areas, mm-hmm. bringing the cost down.
You're not taking market share away from Vodacom on the mobile side.
I don't know. That's why I always say it's super complementary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're in a total connected world. You know, you go to the UK, for instance. You know, and I've done huge user groups with customers there, you know, when I was with Vodafone. And people want to be connected. Doesn't matter where you are, you want to be connected. Doesn't matter if it's in a restaurant through their Wi-Fi or through whatever service. And the technology becomes not the you just want to be connected.
Mm.
And so I think it's still to create that connected world, I think we talk to one another, you know.
I think I've reached the point where I'm so connected I actually want to disconnect, but that's a different story. I wanted to ask you what changes would you like to see from a policy and a regulatory perspective in South Africa to assist you with what you're trying to do here in terms of rolling out infrastructure into these areas, particularly from a key perspective. What can regulators and politicians do that will help you bridge this digital divide and get everyone connected? What are some of the red tape? What are some of the issues that you face in rolling out that could be solved with a bit of change to policy?
I think, you know, you look at the Wayleaf, you know, the issues we had with Wayleafs 5 years, 6 years ago.
Oh, these are just, it's a technical term. Yeah, it's the permission from the municipality to roll out infrastructure along a piece of road.
Oh, it was like the right of way to use the infrastructure or the public road. You know, it was really difficult to get those Wayleafs, you know, but that's fast tracked. So that's working. So now what you're seeing is getting access to areas, deploying fiber is quite simple. If I can say, listen, I just came out of this ComCom thing, is make things faster. You know, don't overcomplicate things. It's easy to overcomplicate things, but then you sit with 31,000 pages of documents. Now, who's going to read that? You know, and what's that going to cost? for the parties? What's it going to cost the government? What's it going to cost the parties that actually want to merge? It's, you know, and I think what we could have done is we could have used all that money in a way to deploy fiber, you know, faster. Mm-hmm. So what I say is, listen, if there's a solution to do things faster, do it. It's easy to complicate.
Why do we complicate
things? No, but that's a normal. We do it in business as well. Complicate things. You can just go look at it. You do one policy and that policy evolves and it becomes a huge, huge barrier in time.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll have to really go look at it again and say, listen, what still adds value?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I say? And then go look at it and change it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have the commitment to change it effectively. Mm-hmm. But I would say speed, especially in the tech and digital space, in the connected space, it ties directly to development. Okay, that's the first thing. But time is not our friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing. So I need access to capital, and time is not my friend. Why? Because the world is connecting so fast. So just look at the new AI tools that are out there, mm-hmm. the engines that are out there. If you don't have access to those things, there's no way you can compete. You know what I'm saying? And that's connectivity. And I would do things faster. You know, but I honestly do sit with some of the ministers and really, I mean, they're young guys, dynamic people, you know, and I'm seeing this, you know, mm-hmm. I'm seeing positiveness in challenging status quo, which I like,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it ends up to, you know, really go look at it and drive speed. You know, I'm not saying take shortcuts, make the right decisions, be decisive, but time is not our friend.
Mm-hmm. Just lastly, I want to ask you what Maziv becomes in time. You're focused on deploying fiber infrastructure today, but we all know that telcos eventually end up moving up the value chain. Do you remain an infrastructure player only with its attendant margins, or do you start to layer services on top of that? And if you do start to layer services on top of that, what sort of services?
Yeah, listen, that's... Yeah, we'll focus on this merger first, but I'll tell you quickly. I think we'll stay to the core. We're an infrastructure player. We also, you mm-hmm. know, we stay to open access ISPs. You know, and I think our ISPs, both on business side and on fiber to the home, are phenomenal companies. Not you know, and then I talk the top 10 guys. You know, these folks are technology driven. They drive things.
It's a very competitive space.
Very competitive mm. space. You know, and it's tough. You know, so I do think there will be some consolidation on that layer, but. But really top-class companies, you know. So I think that's where we'll stay is I think we'll value add a little bit more. You know, I would love to see that we integrate and get APIs integrated to our ISP so we can assist with customer experience, customer service, because I think it'll be a challenge for both of us in time. And I think if you go look at efficiencies, that's where I think we can be better efficient, if we can be faster. Because, I mean, you know this, you know, a lot of times a customer sits in his house, he's got an issue, and we're passing the buck between the wholesale player and the ISP where the problem is. You know, and it takes an hour or two or three longer than we should take mm-hmm. because it has to go through a specific channel. So I really think, you know, how do we get the customer experience leg of the end customer more aligned, you know, and there I would like to play a role with the ISPs to say, listen, can we not give a holistic type of solution, end customer solution to them when a break happens or when there's a problem on a service? It might be an ISP billing issue, it might be a network issue at the back, or it might be even an ISP speed or throughput issue.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we actually holistically get that? And I would love our systems and we've got that now with the Salesforce and the integrations we've done, to see if we can't integrate some of those platforms to see, listen, we can quicker get to the end customer support. And that will create efficiencies for the ISP
mm-hmm.
in a way. And that's how I see it. I think a lot of ISPs will say no at this point, no, because they really want to keep that relationship. It's not that I want to get into the relationship side of it. I want to get into a point where we create a world-class service to the end customer, mm-hmm. you know, in the easiest, most affordable and most efficient way.
I know that Tinus Mulder, the former CEO of DFA, used to talk about expanding into things like data centers and becoming a tower co, a data co, all this sort of stuff. Is that still kind of where the thinking is, or are you purely a connectivity player?
At this point, connectivity.
Okay.
You know, so I think we did go back one step back, you mm-hmm. know, with the challenges we had on the network. I think we went one step back. I think the first step was to create this world-class network. We've done that. And then it's maintaining it. You know, I still believe there's huge opportunities in connecting South Africa through DFI from a tower point of view. You know, to say, listen, how do we get solutions to get to the towers at the end of the day? And really, that's huge.
Okay.
You know, that's the next 50,000 kilometers of fiber.
So there's still a lot of work to do on that side.
Okay. So that's, if you take that, DFI sits with 15,000 kilometers. 5,000 will come in from Vodacom, 20. There's another 50,000. That's basically 2.5 times what we've got currently of fiber that we will have to deploy. So so I think there's a lot of work. You know, there might be small solutions where you can look at a business and where you can do add-ons. But if you look materially at it, you know, I think we should stay focused on what we're good at and make sure that we drive that focus areas of the connecting South Africa and making that lasting impact on people's lives.
And on the innovation side of things, I know there was talk years ago about doing things like introducing 10 gigabit solutions on the Vumatel network and that sort of thing. And I know that market must be quite limited in size.
Yes.
Are you still looking at doing things like that, or is the focus really on just expanding coverage as possible?
Remember, we had two. Remember those that we still got, but I mean those days we had 70% active Ethernet. Our fiber to them was 70% active Ethernet. We had a small portion GPON on it. That focus did change a bit. So we're more GPON at this point. Still a very strong active Ethernet network. We can do much more on active Ethernet, you know. So we did, remember, we did launch the 10 gig service. I think there was one. The CEO or cool the ideas. Owner, co-founder of Cool Ideas was launched. And it worked perfectly.
Okay.
But he had to put a lot of equipment in there, you know, he, as an ISP, supported himself a little bit. So so it's a little bit of a, you know, remember, you need that ISP layer also that has to upgrade a little bit, you know. So I think back to the demand thing, I think, you know, in time you'll go. As technology grows, you'll go up the stack, definitely. Mm-hmm. At this point, we on a gig service, I think, working nicely. Try and get the price points down a little bit on those gig points, on those gig services. But I think the next step is getting to a very structured consumer 2.5 gig, you know, in time, in the short to medium term. You know, but do it in a structured way. But still, it's based on the demand. So doesn't commercially, is it feasible to do it? Can we do it? We can do it. You know, but how do we do it? You know, and what do we focus on? For me, I'm going to focus now on rolling out where we can, get as much as I can done on connecting South Africa, and the technology layer will follow on top of that, obviously.
Dietlof Maree, CEO of Maziv, congratulations on the deal, and thank you for your time.
Duncan, thank you so much, man. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure.